Anytime we have a show on Wednesday after the Tuesday night election, that is always going to be our top lead topic of today, of the day. And the only race I wasn't sure about coming in was the Las Cruces City Council District 6 race. That was a four-way race where it was not decided on the first ballot, and so it goes to ranked choice voting. And the Secretary of State's website wasn't a lot of help on that, but Daisy was able to find out that the winner was the leader, not surprising, and that's John Munoz with 36% of the ballot. Once again, that's District 6. In District 5, Becky Ann Curran, the incumbent, retained her seat with a victory over Ronnie Cisneros with 62% of the vote. That was the largest margin of victory for the city council races. And in District 3, Michael Harris defeated Isaiah Paltaez with 55% of the vote. And they will be two new members of the city council this year. Michael Harris will be replacing Becky Graham, and John Munoz will be replacing Yvonne Flores. There will be no new members on the Las Cruces School Board. There were three incumbents running for re-election this year. All three of them were victorious. One of them, Patrick Nolan, was running uncontested in District 1. In District 3, Robert Wofford had a four-way race as well, but his didn't need to go to the second round. He was able to get 52% of the vote in a four-way race, so that is impressive. And in District 2, Pamela Court got 59% of the vote. And those are the results from Las Cruces, and we can talk about those. But as we were talking before the show, it's a countywide election. Las Cruces is not the only city in the county. And I know you were kind of watching some of what was going on in the South County.
Correct, yeah. So in Anthony, for the mayor's race, they will have a new mayor, Gabriel Holguin. Trying to get the numbers here to see. Here it is. Maybe not. But anyway, Gabriel Holguin won his race to be mayor.
Did the incumbent run for re-election?
Yes, she did. So yeah. Diana Murillo, yes.
Okay.
So she lost, and remember she was... Okay, so here it is. So he got 59%, and Diana Murillo got 33%, and the third candidate, Oscar Enriquez, only got 7%. So pretty decisive, I think, for the voters in Anthony.
Anytime an incumbent loses, you know, by that large margin, it's obviously indicative that it's not just one party that's not happy. That's a, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the constituents had something to say. And then, yeah, in Sunland Park, there was actually four councilor seats that were up for election. One was uncontested, and so Milly Sandoval, it maintains her position. But the other three, I think, were interesting because the incumbent for, should have been more organized here, who was appointed, Susan Gomez, she actually lost, and her the other candidate, Raul Tejas, and that was for District 6, he won 72% of the vote.
So for people who aren't following that, what does that mean? What does that tell you? What is driving that, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Well, so Susan, she wasn't there for very long, but I think what it means is that the voters really wanted to make a decision again because she was appointed by the governor.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I think that's
always a challenge when you have to run the first time.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And so I think that they were really looking for someone who's, I guess, more independent of.
Yep.
Yeah. And then another. Yeah. Another incumbent, Jesus Soto, he lost, certainly not by such a wide margin, but Bertha Salmon, she won by 59%. And she was previously on the council, and there was a little bit of controversy about her residency, but that didn't seem to impact voters.
Like I said, that seems like a frequent issue in the South County.
Unfortunately, yes. Yeah, where people live. Is it El Paso? Is it somewhere else?
That's right.
Unfortunately, that's right.
But I guess the bottom line is a lot of shakeup, a lot of...
I think so, yeah. There was quite a bit of changes, yeah.
Now, do you think that's driven at all by reaction to Project Jupiter, or do you think it's just other local issues that we're not talking about?
Yeah, for Sunland Park, I definitely think it's other local issues.
Yeah.
You know, just from the growth of the, you know, and I've said it before on the show, but, you know, just the expansion of the city and the continued sort of annexing of county land and state land for it to grow. But then people obviously feeling like their needs aren't directly being addressed, right? Because it's really focused on economic development and not just the regular everyday, you know, person that lives there.
Yeah.
You know, also just the number of dispensaries.
Yeah, all the money goes to the people who drive in and out every drive in every morning and out every evening.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Because there still isn't a grocery store to name, you know.
Yeah, right.
No commercial pharmacies, you know, a handful of clinics. But, you know, you can definitely buy your cannabis if you need it. Sunland Park.
The last time I looked, they were second to Albuquerque.
Yes.
Albuquerque had the most sales in the state for obvious reasons.
Right. And, well, yeah, a million people, right?
Yeah. At Sunland Park is second for obvious reasons.
Right.
What they call a captive audience there in El Paso.
Yep, exactly.
So
we'll see. Yeah, I think it's to be determined on how things are going to be impacted or changed now that there's, you know, several seats, you know, been changed.
Yeah, hope changes for the better.
The
other thing locally in the elections we should just touch on is the bonds that they all passed. I had issues with the big county bond just because I didn't think it was specific enough, but I'm not upset that it passed. I'll be glad when they do the rec centers and the senior centers and, you know, I'm not opposed to any of that stuff. I just would have liked to have seen it worded differently and more specifically.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with you on that. And I know, you know, Empowerment Congress and I had attended several of the sort of information sessions back early in August when they were talking about different projects. And, you know, the county ultimately divided the bond into, you know, $105 million and then the smaller portion of 35 million, something like that.
Right. Yeah.
Because people were pretty upset about, or not upset, I shouldn't say, but
there wasn't the same level of support for the fairgrounds project,
exactly,
which got the lower amount.
Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah.
They split that off. So, you know, afraid that it might sink the whole thing.
Right. Right, which ultimately, see, like
yeah,
you said,
both
passed. Exactly.
Yeah,
yeah. But yeah, no, and the community people were pretty discontented by that idea. And, you know, they were really more focused on infrastructure needs and, and community centers and service centers. And, like, we should be more creative about how we, you know, serve our county residents.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I voted for the fairgrounds and not the big ones, so... I mean, I like the fairgrounds. What can I say? I think it's an underused asset. I know it's a little bit out of town. And I worry about the wine festival being out there and, you know, concerts. I worry about that a little bit. But we need something. We need a venue that's, you know, somewhere in that 5,000 range between the Pan Am and the Rio Grande Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most of that was built in the after World War II era that, you know, when they're doing all the projects and it still doesn't have lighting in the parking lot. And it's, like I said, it's for people who don't make it out there, I understand why they wouldn't want it, especially at the expense of senior centers and, you know, community centers. That not saying those shouldn't be a higher priority. But I guess I think the county should be able to do both. I mean, the difference between the school bond and this, the school bond is, you know, a rotating bond. So every new one replaces an old one. And they could always make the argument that your taxes don't go up. And honestly,
right.
The opponents will always jump in and go, oh, yeah, they never tell you that they'll go down if it doesn't pass, which is also true.
Right.
But, you know, that's an easier sell than the county bond, which I think they said would be average $15 a month in property taxes, which isn't a lot, but, you know.
Right. But for 30 years, you know, for the...
Right. For the life of the bond.
For the life of the bond, exactly.
And that's assuming that they don't do a rotating bond after that, which is, you know.
Yeah. So hopefully, right, no, it's... In any case, right, we have the results, and we definitely hope that the, you know, that the county then can now move on some projects that will help improve, yeah, the lives of the...
That's right.
...the residents out in the county, for sure.
That's right. Before we... Well, let's go ahead and go on to the national... Well, no, I don't. Before we get off that, I did want to ask you real quick about Project Jupiter. I mean, you are more involved in that than anybody else here at the radio station, for sure. What... Kind of just give us an update. Where do things stand right now?
Well, to be honest, I don't know that I can give you too many updates just because there isn't a lot of information that's being provided to the public.
Well, that's fair. Let me make it a better question. Where are you guys at?
Yeah.
You guys being the Empowerment Congress.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. So we're... You know, obviously we had filed that lawsuit, which I can't really comment on too much. But we're still firm and, you know, looking to, you know, hold our elected officials accountable and ensure that the project doesn't move forward as it stands, because it's really going to pose problems, you know, to public health. We know that there's been a few things. There's an application. When I was last on, I kind of spoke with Peter about this, but you know, there's all these different like shell companies that are, that's part of the problem is like, well, some of the stuff is public, some of it isn't. And the stuff that is not, really very forthcoming. Right. And it's not in alignment even with what has been presented to the county or to the public. And so a company called Acoma, has already submitted an application to the Environment Department for air quality to start construction on two natural gas power plants there on the site, which from what I understand, you know, the scientists say there's an extreme amount of pollution that they're asking to emit into our air. So, but again, that company itself isn't named anywhere in the bonds. It's not named anywhere in the project. So,
right.
Who are we?
It was understood that there would be a power plant connected to it, but there was, you know, no details. And that was
intentional.
My biggest complaint. I mean, right. I know people living down there had more immediate complaints, obviously.
Right. Yeah. But no, exactly. And then that's what I'm saying is just sort of, it's kind of a web we're trying to, you know.
Yeah. And I know these things don't, nothing big usually changes until it does. And so from 2 weeks to 4 weeks, things are crawling along and, you know, that's how it works.
Right.
Well, let's go ahead and go to the national election. It was a good night for Democrats. Won the governor's races in New Jersey and Virginia. The Zoran Mondani won the mayor's race in New York City. The proposition in California to redistrict there to counter the redistrict in Texas was successful. Surprisingly, a little bit to me, the guy who wrote the thing about putting two bullets in his opponent's head won his election for attorney general in Virginia, which tells you what kind of a night it was for Democrats. That guy shouldn't have won. He shouldn't have been in the race, but there you go.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my concern is, well, first of all of this happens, obviously, in the shadow of a shutdown.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this will provide an impetus. There's discussion that Thune is finally starting to talk to Democrats in the Senate. And so we are already at the longest shutdown in American history. I guess the only thing I'm saying is it was a very good night for Democrats. And I don't want to be a wet blanket or, you know, I will simply say they won elections that they should have won. They won elections in blue states. And they won convincingly. And probably got the attention of Republicans in Congress, if not the president. There probably will be something done to end this shutdown, I certainly hope, within the next few days.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if Democrats read too much into it and think that, you know, this is the same as winning elections in Texas and Georgia and right. North Carolina.
Oh, right, or during the midterms.
Yeah. Exactly. It was a good night, but let's leave it at that, I think.
Well, I mean, I would kind of agree with you and just say that, you know, we shouldn't, or, you know, Democrats shouldn't rest on their laurels, you know,
in
terms of moving into an election year, you know, in 2026, like this is a good sign for the future, I would say. And that doesn't mean that, you know, we've won November 2026.
Right. And overall, the party brand is still awful.
I agree. Absolutely. That's what I say. Good start. And
right.
What else can we do? Or what else can the Democratic Party do, you know, to really think about how those races were won specifically, you know, and what needs to change and shift in the party?
Well, you know, it's interesting because everybody wants to point to Mamdani, thank you, and say that he is now the face of the Democratic Party. He's the governor of New York. The governor of New York has never been the face of any party, whether it was Republican. They've had Republican, Democratic governors. They've always been, not the governor, mayor.
Mayor,
not even the governor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, New York City is not America in any way, shape, or form.
Definitely not.
Yeah. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's going to be incredibly challenging. And he, you know, obviously he's not going to be able to do a fraction of the things that he is earnestly promising to try to do. You know, I'm not saying that he won't try. It's a huge, ungovernable, unmanageable city. And always has been. And if you don't get the rats and the garbage, nobody cares, it seems like, about anything else. I say as an outsider who's never lived there, but that's just the way it seems.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, I think that, I mean, just speaking about his race in particular, you know, he had billionaires against him and, you know, giving all that money to Cuomo. And even the president, you know, endorsed Andrew Cuomo.
For all the good that did, he might.
Well, right. Exactly. It didn't really. However, you know, it... I think it shows it just in terms like the power of the people and who knows, you know, if I think part of the issue too, just around, you know, governance is like the coalition of people who are, you know, are willing to work together.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And so it sounds like, you know, there's council folks who are, you know, or assembly, right? They're called assembly.
Yeah, I think that's right.
You know, they're there to, you know, he has folks supporting him in the assembly as well. So I think, you know, I think time will tell. I don't know that it's too soon to say, but, you know, he definitely wants to make some really big changes. So he would definitely need a lot of support. And I think, you know, that was really came clear in terms of support of the community.
And, you know, he will have a huge platform for the next 4 years, I think. And like I said, obviously he's not going to be able to do everything he says, but... if he governs competently, you know, I think just like Bernie Sanders has done an awful lot to, you know, proud Democratic socialist, and has never once backed down from what he believes.
Right.
And, you know, you can label him whatever you want, you know, communist. Okay. How inventive and creative is that? You know, I haven't heard that my entire life. That's fine. Some people are swayed by that. I think older people are swayed by that.
But that context just, right now in 2025, that context just doesn't
resonate with
voters like under 50. You know,
my generation grew up thinking that, you know, first of all, we had Cuba, which was our local version of oppression and communism and the horrors of that. And then you had this, you know, at that time, the Soviet Union.
Right.
And you had China. And all of them were these oppressive dictatorships where it was real easy to say, you know, oh, you're America, our democracy. And, and because it kind of seemed like that was at least what we were told. And I do think those, you know, all of those countries have matured. Their governments are not, you know, and I know what's happening with the Uyghurs. And I know that Russia, if you say anything bad about the war, I'm not claiming that. But it's not what it was.
Yeah. I would agree with that, too. I mean, I think now more, I mean, even if we think about this idea, you know, I mean, not just of socialism, but the Soviet Union and, you know, what was China and like this sort of state control. I mean, you know, I'm talking about being a wet blanket here, but I hate to say that. I almost feel like this country is going down that path.
Yes.
You know, right. And so how can we then, you know, be, you know, say that we are holding the flag of democracy when our government is going in that direction? So I don't know.
It's been an interesting, what, 8-9 months. It will be an interesting 4 years. And I should say a big decision coming up in the courts. I think they're hearing oral arguments today on whether Trump can just be in charge of all tariffs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, I'm not an attorney, but that will be a huge stretch of the read. You know, these people who claim to be textualists and who claim to go by strictly the word of what's in the Constitution, that's going to be a huge stretch for them to say, okay, yeah, I know it says Congress has the authority to do that, but I don't want to make Donald Trump mad at me. I mean, what's the legal?
Right. And again, to my point about, you know, being under an authoritarian government, like, although there's this separation, like, you know, built into the system, I'm just thinking back to, like, you know, government 101 and, like, learning about why, you know, our government structure is the way it is. And so that no one branch of government has more power than the other. Like, they, you know, they have a lane. They all sort of operate in it and then are supposed to work together and cooperate to so that the country can function.
Right.
But it sounds like, you know, every day, you know, that Donald Trump, you know, is trying to almost erase that and, you know, take all the power for himself, which is not what a democracy is and certainly not what, you know, our founding fathers and, you know, the creation of our country and the way it functions ever intended to be.
No, not at all. And, you know, before we get through this, I do want to talk a little bit about the shutdown and beyond the politics of it, because this is, not only is this the longest, but I think this is the cruelest one. This is the only one where, you know, we had a rich guy come in and write a check so the troops get paid. But when it came to feeding the people, when it came to basic services, this is the only one where our leader said, yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and what we're seeing on the ground, you know, it's just people, again, people are afraid and there's much longer, you know, lines at food banks and, you know, maybe we could have, you know, Lorenzo on from Casa Peregrinos, you know,
idea.
To discuss
the impact, you know, he's having.
They were having, yeah. Because I know that they're serving way more families than they did even 6 months ago. And 6 months ago, they were serving way more than they were a year ago, all around this issue, right? And so, I know also just, you know, colleagues and friends out in the community just taking all the vacation they can, you know, as federal workers and to try and still get paid and trying to figure out a way what they can do to be able to just live, essentially.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I hope that it does get resolved, but even then, there's talk about, well, maybe you get paid and maybe you don't. And we do have a caller.
Okay.
Let me see if the headphones work. The headphones, I know, all got turned down last night.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Welcome. Please.
I wanted to just throw in one point about the shutdown and the starving people. In creating the SNAP and all that, the Congress set up a fund so that if there were a shutdown, those folks would eat. And the only reason that that's not happening is that the Trump administration chooses not to use the existing fund. It ain't the shutdown.
Absolutely true. Absolutely correct.
Anyway, just want to throw that in.
Thanks, Peter.
Enjoying listening to you.
Thanks. Thanks for calling.
Couldn't resist.
No, that's a very, very good point. Like I said, not only is he saying, but he's proactively taking steps to harm people because he thinks that's a Democrat program. I mean, he said that at the very beginning of the shutdown.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care about these programs that help people because those are all Democrat programs.
Mm-hmm. Right. And how many of the, those Democrat people voted for him, you know, people on those programs voted for him back last November.
Yeah, exactly. And voter's remorse, that's, you know. We are down to our last couple of minutes. I wanted to let people know about something we have coming up here at the radio station. Let's see. This radio station, Free Las Cruces, and we rely on you. That is absolutely true. KTALLP, 101.5 FM Community Radio, is putting out a call for committed DJs and volunteers to ensure we can expand our local programming. We need your help in every area, from hosting your own show to assisting with social media, event planning, and audio production. We are an all-volunteer station, and training is provided. This is your chance to gain valuable media experience and give back to your community in a meaningful way. Ready to step up? We're holding our next information session on Wednesday, November 12th, from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the radio station, 121 Wyatt Drive, number 9. As I always say, we are across the street from Hubbard's Music in a U-shaped plaza. We are in the far back corner next to the labor union. They got the big office. We got the little office here in the corner. So once again, for anybody interested in helping out here at KTAL, and we are, you know, as they say, all volunteer, always looking for help. That's going to be Wednesday, November 12th from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. here at 121 Wyatt Drive. Anything else we need to mention before we go on our first break here?
No. I don't think so. I know that. I guess the other thing just about the shutdown and SNAP benefits is just that New Mexico, right? The state of New Mexico has funded for the first 10 days of the month that folks will continue to get their benefits. So
they have.
They
and
have.
That's an important. Let's end it on that happy point.